the legal profession viewed sales as something that, you know, you did in other industries. We don't sell. We're not salespeople as lawyers. We're here, you know, the client has a problem. They come to us. We help them solve their problems, right? It's not about selling. But of course, you and I know that we're selling every day in every way that we influence and we try to encourage others and to bring in new business.
Plug into the mind of the world's cutting-edge innovators, visionaries, and thought leaders who are rewriting the rules of sales and success. It's your time to make an impact. I am your host, Jason Mark Campbell, and this is the Selling with Love podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Selling with Love podcast, and I'm very excited about the topic that we're going to be discussing today because it's going to go outside of our traditional sales environment. We're actually going to talk about legal and leadership. Now, we've had conversations around leadership many times on the show, but legal has not been one that we've explored too much. And I'm very excited about the guest that I'm going to bring on today because he has been at the forefront of some of the biggest company restructurings and some bankruptcy filings across various industries, particularly in the healthcare sector. He is the CEO chairman of Baker Donaldson. It's one of the largest firms, legal firms in the US, and the man has actually worked on so many different corporate things such as REITs, lenders, services, trustees, complex bankruptcies. It's a world I know very little of. And so I have this deep curiosity about how does it function at that level? Is there room for selling with love? And what are some of the misconceptions we might have around growing a business and involving legal, where most of what we know might be coming through the media and might actually not be so accurate? He's created some initiatives while he was there, such as Women's Initiative Pathway to Leadership Committee. He is writing his forthcoming book, which is Everybody Leads, which is just around the corner coming out right now. And it's helping people understand that leadership isn't a position or a title, but it's how you live and lead yourself every single day. We'll talk about this and more. Tim, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you.
Jason, it's an honor to be here. You have spoken to me through your podcast and through your work about selling with love for a long time. So I'm excited to be here and have this discussion.
Well, I'm excited to have a conversation with you because as I mentioned, like even some of the words, I'm like, okay, real estate investment trust, doing bankruptcy, like this all feels huge. And before I get into that, you know, most people look at lawyers and might not think that selling or love is closely related. So I'd be curious to know about your approach when you got into the legal field.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right, Jason. I mean, both aspects of that, selling and love, are things that you don't hear a lot about in the legal industry. On sales, particularly, the legal profession grew up as a very honorable, noble profession, which it is, but it was one that viewed sales as something that, you know, you did in other industries. We don't sell. We're not salespeople as lawyers. We're here, you know, the client has a problem. They come to us. We help them solve their problems, right? It's not about selling. But of course, you and I know that we're selling every day in every way that we influence and we try to encourage others and to bring in new business. And so I've really had to work with our colleagues here at Baker Donaldson in thinking about sales as an act of service. If your client has a significant problem and you can introduce them into a colleague who has an expertise that can help them, that is a form of sales. You're selling your firm, you're selling your colleague's expertise. But if you think about it in the context of helping them accomplish their strategic objectives, that's something that's a win-win for the client. And so we really had to talk about, when you talk about sales and selling, what does it really mean and what does it look like in our profession? So I've had that aspect of it. But then as you said, I mean, love and lawyers, I mean, other than, you know, you see, like you said, in the media, there might be a movie, Lawyers in Love or whatever. But other than that, right, it was a Jackson Brown song. But the concept of love in leading and how you operate a business, I think is really foundational to how we've been able to have some success. And it's really about that relationship with each other and how we build authentic relationships, respectful relationships, how we can help each other to thrive, and the collaboration together, the collective of us, are going to help us do better if we're caring for each other, if we're clearing the path for others to succeed, then we can thrive as an organization. And that has taken some sales to convince people that that really can work. And so that's been a lot of what I've been trying to do since I've been in the role of CEO the last 6 years.
Wow. Well, I'll say there's one thing that unites salespeople in legal, and that's that media often portrays us very negatively. Like if you've seen the used car salesman stereotype and you've seen the crooked lawyer stereotype. So how much of that is fiction and how much of that is actually existing in the field? And does the bias have a lot of merit?
I think, I don't know, 90%, 95% of lawyers are out there doing honorable, noble work. They are serving clients. They're helping clients achieve their objectives. They're being those, what we talk about, being trusted advisors, really trying to proactively help clients solve their problems. That's really what ultimately sales is about. You're trying to show how you can help them accomplish things that maybe they have some challenges getting there. Now, there's certainly in every industry, there are individual lawyers and you read about them that give industry a bad name. Some of them are very successful too. And so you just have to kind of know that that's out there. But my experience has been that it is really a profession of individuals who are very bright, very smart, very talented, really dedicated to serving the profession, the rule of law, helping companies and individuals, you know, navigate the legal system and the legal structure. But as you said, you know, you've got that in sales, you've got that in media. Really, any industry, you have the bad apples.
I think when a bad apple is a lawyer, it hurts more. Like,
oh,
they have
right.
they have a lot of power, you know?
They do. And you're right. They do have a lot of power, and it ends up being, you know, headlines, front page news. And that's unfortunate. But the amount of, I see, like within our organization, because our firm is Baker Donaldson, a lot of what we do is Baker something. Like I have a Baker Vision 2028 right now. We have Baker Fit, Baker Well, talking about mental health and wellness. But we have Baker Cares, and we're giving back in our communities. And that's a big commitment of who we are as a firm, including, you know, free legal services, pro bono work, but also rolling up our sleeves, working with organizations trying to eradicate homelessness across our footprint, because there's been an increase of that. So I think lawyers are doing a lot of really great things. And a lot of times those don't necessarily get the headlines as the big, massive failure of someone who has gone off the rails.
Well, I'm probably going to poke on that one more time. But before that, you said something very surprising to me. And you mentioned how most lawyers don't embrace sales and it's something they actually resist. And here I am being from the outside. I always thought like, oh, lawyers must be natural salespeople, because the way I imagine a lawyer is someone making their case in a courtroom and is like convincing the jury, which feels like a very much of a sales activity. But I think there's a huge gap between the realities and how people are in the legal field and where sales fits in.
Yeah, you're exactly right. That's a really wise point about you are trying to sell a jury, convince a jury of your peers, right, about the rightness of your client's perspective. I think some of it, as I was thinking about it, you know, I don't know in other countries as the case, but in the United States, particularly the last 20, 30 years, you've had the proliferation of billboard advertising, you know, had a car wreck, call, you know, 1-800-LAWYER or whatever. And I think that, and that is certainly an avenue of sales. I mean, I think guerrilla marketing, right, you know, all over the place. And I think that's why a lot of, you know, more corporate law firms like we are, I think people just naturally think, well, then I'm going to run as far away from that kind of sales type idea. And there's nothing wrong with a billboard, and I don't mean to say that, but I think that kind of just got this perspective of like, no, it's a profession and we're not going to do that. But as I said, when you think about sales, it's really relationships. You have to build those relationships. So yeah, there's certainly, I'm sure people call those 800 numbers. That's certainly working for them. But for us, it's really about building those relationships with those clients, being present. I think I heard a statistic the other day that 71% of companies have said they haven't seen their primary lawyer in the last 3 years. That's not going to be at Baker Donaldson, because we said we want you to be out there with your clients, walking, you know, go to their buildings, go to their factories, understand what they're doing, understanding their business off the clock, you know, not charging them for that, because that's going to help you become a better trusted advisor. And that's all about sales too, but it's sales in that professional relationship setting. So
yep. It's a similar thing I speak about in sales, is like if a sale is done by a good salesperson, typically in a B2B setting, is a very boring thing. It doesn't get headlines. It's the job is done proactively and you're listening to your customer. And, you know, we'll see the movie Wolf of Wall Street and then people think it's about that gab on the phone. And then you guys have your Better Call Saul, which is going to be your equivalent. And so that's why I find that it's very hilarious. Now, I'd be curious about you. Like your journey to become the CEO of this massive legal firm, like, have you always had a passion for law? Like, what was the spark that got you into this industry? Was it intentional, accidental? I kind of want to unpack that.
The actual practice of law was, I really call it accidental. I kind of stumbled into it is how I say it. I was a mass communication major in college. I thought I wanted to be radio and television, do broadcasting.
I can hear it in the voice.
Well, I made a good decision not to go that path. I did anchor our campus news when I was a small liberal arts school when I was in college. But I had a media law course in my junior year that was talking about a lot of First Amendment stuff and freedom of press and freedom of, you know, speech. That fascinated me. And I was interning at a TV station and it wasn't as glamorous as I thought. And I saw a poster for, you know, the entrance exam for law school. So I said, well, I'd like this law stuff on that one class. And I took it and I did pretty well. So, well, maybe I'll go try this. I mean, it literally kind of stumbled into it. But then I came out, started working with a boss who was really a tough boss, but ultimately spoke a lot into me, including about leadership. That's what led to the book Everybody Leads and that journey. But I really did come to this point where I loved helping clients solve problems. And that's just part of my DNA. And that's why I even gravitated towards bankruptcy, corporate bankruptcy in my personal practice. Our firm does a lot more than that, but that was my practice because it was. A bank has lent a lot of money to a company. They're struggling financially. Nobody's happy. The employees may not have gotten paid because there's not enough money. How do we solve these problems? We're in the healthcare industry. We're trying to take care of people in an assisted living facility, and we don't have enough money. You know, that's a lot of pretty challenging issues that you got to get a lot of stakeholders together and come up with a solution. That kind of just fired me up. And so I really did love building that team and trying to help solve those problems. So that was kind of the journey into the law. But I certainly had no vision of becoming a CEO of a law firm when I started out. And that kind of just was that leadership bug that kept driving me a little bit to get me to that point.
First off, that's amazing. It sounds like you're really in the crust of like your passion and something that you match your skills and your passion. And this whole leadership aspect, I think, is so needed to be discussed. And I'm so glad that you're bringing this literature forward. And, you know, for a lot of people I've spoken to in business positions have even called the current times being that we're at a crisis of leadership. And I'd be curious if that's a sentiment you echo and that you see within your own workplace. I'd love to hear your thoughts.
I think within my workplace, I don't know if I can comment, you know, globally or whatever, but in our organization, I think, I don't know that I would call it a crisis of leadership. I think people are really tired. I think I've heard somebody said 2025 is a year of being exhausted. I think everyone is just a compounding effect of, you know, the pandemic and then a lot of, the disharmony among, you know, people, different parties, political parties, things like that. And so I think what I've really had to focus, I think our focus on leadership has been, first of all, we can all get better as leaders every day. We got to be intentional about those daily actions that can compound to help us get better in leading and influencing others and impacting others. But it's also about how to have that self-care too, right? Because of that idea that we're kind of exhausted, we're tired, we have to build in that mental health wellness plan as well. So I think what I see is more, there's a hunger to want to get better as a leader, but recognizing that there's a lot that we're all balancing and how do we balance, you know, taking care of ourselves to then show up as our best selves for others. So that's kind of what I see in our organization.
I've noticed in some of the organizations that I've worked with that, especially for the younger generation, it seems like there's a fear of taking ownership. And I don't know if that's just a spirit of the times. I don't know if we're not doing a good job at like passing the baton to the younger generation. Like, maybe it's always been this way, but that's what I've noticed, like for especially with the companies I jump in. Like I jump in because there's basically nobody that's come in and said, okay, let's bring everybody together. Let's make some things move forward and being kind of a captain that thrives. Everyone's kind of being a little fearful and even the psychological safety aspect kind of seems to be a bit of in a distress. So I've noticed that and I'm just wondering, obviously in your firm, it sounds like there's some good foundations in place, but is this something you've noticed in organizations you work with?
And I see it within our organization too. I mean, that's the struggle. I mean, certainly we're not perfect. And so we do have individuals who are struggling, I think, with that and stepping up. I mean, we have some glimmers of where you see the hope of that generation who really does get engaged. We've done some training, some cohort kind of training around leadership development and next generation leaders and really trying to prepare them to be successor leaders into some of our practice group roles or office leader roles. And we have had people step up and become a part of that. So I've seen it, but I think it's been harder to get buy-in sometimes because it is. It's a lot of extra work and you don't necessarily see the dividends, the return on investment of that time to build your leadership skills directly. It takes time, as you know. I mean, you have to build that over that muscle over years. And I think sometimes some colleagues shy away from that because they want it more instant gratification. If I can bill more hours, I'm going to get a bigger bonus. But rather than doing the stuff that's maybe not billable, but it's investing in my future. And so that's something that we try to talk about a lot. And we show examples, tell the stories of people who have done that and how it can pay off. But I think that you're right, the psychology of it. And I don't claim to have all the answers about the, you know, five generations in the workplace and how that all plays out. But we do see some of exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, I think the instant gratification side probably is the biggest shift that I'm seeing because, you know, a lot of how you would perceive, like if you would take on some leadership and responsibility. I also think probably our reward system actually don't recognize the people that go the extra mile because it's probably harder to see the visibility. And so it sounds like the opposite effect has been things that, again, we get talked about in the media, such as like the quiet quitting movement that happened. And so, you know, for those who are shying away from taking on the responsibility to drive their skills for like leadership development, there's obviously fruits at the end of that, you know, process. What are some of the things people are missing out because they are not developing themselves into leaders? Like, I'd want to be reminded strongly onto, well, if I do take that, what is the fruit at the end?
Yeah. And I guess some of it, it's my own story. And I mentioned a kind of referenced about, you know, the whole journey of everybody leads. I did have this boss who was a really gruff, you know, yelling type of boss. He did a lot of tough love, but it wasn't a lot of love. It was a lot of just tough, right? And I had messed up, and I was a young lawyer, and I was very transactional in how I was approaching it. Maybe what we see in some of the, you know, young generation now. I got a project, I did it, I turned it in, and then I went on to the next project. And I'd messed up a big project I was working on. I'd given it to someone else who then turned it into the boss, and it completely blew it. And so he's yelling at us in front of a lot of other lawyers on the phone. And the next day I had drawn the short straw to take him to court. I had to pick him up at his house, and we're in the car, and I'm thinking I'm going to get fired because I'd messed this up. We'd stayed up all night to get it fixed. And he said he first wanted to apologize to me because he said, I shouldn't have yelled at you in front of other people. But I was really angry because I see a lot of leadership in you. I see a lot of ability for you to thrive in your career, but you've got to step up and own it. You got to own everything, not rely on other people to fix it and think that's going to get done. And that really led me on this journey of where I am today. And so if I'm talking to a young person, you know, I think it's that daily investment of, I said, well, if I'm going to be a leader, what does that mean? And that led me to start reading some books. And, you know, at that point, listen to cassettes, you know, books on tape, which now you can do Audible, but there's podcasts, there's YouTube, and just even, you know, 10, 15 minutes a day of pouring into yourself. You know, it may be that you're not trying to visualize, well, I can't wait 10 years for that success, but even those 10 or 15 minutes today are going to compound, and they're going to help you whatever the next part of your journey is. And so I think the fruit is, you're just going to improve, you're going to have a bigger impact, you're going to have bigger influence on others, and that really should drive, I think it drives bigger motivation in what you're doing.
You know, one of the hidden benefits as well is that since everybody else is maybe going towards a quiet quitting type of aspect, if you decide to take responsibility and show leadership, I think there's more opportunities than ever, especially since there's a huge wave of the old guard that's going to be retiring pretty soon. So like the moment you decide to be that person who's going to do things differently, well, there you go. It's going to kind of fall into your lap. And so I have faith. And I, like you said, there's enough media that's out there that can actually educate us in a really good way that I definitely see that, you know, people are coming out and I think the right ones are going to filter in. So I'm crossing fingers and making sure that this is going towards that place. Now, in your book that's just about to come out, you know, a big misconception around leadership is that that's kind of the role you take on and not an action that you can take regardless of your position. I'd love to elaborate on that so that even if somebody's listening to this saying like, okay, well, is this even relevant to me? I'm in customer support or I'm just a salesperson. Does leadership even become relevant to me?
Yeah, it absolutely is. And that's the whole premise of this. Like I was a first year lawyer. I didn't have a title. I didn't have a big corner office. I didn't have a lot of authority to do anything except show up and do my work. But that was my boss talking into me that, well, no, you are a leader because you do have influence. You can impact clients and then you can have an influence on those around you. When I became CEO, we did a town hall for the whole firm to kind of introduce me. I knew a lot of people, but not everyone. And I challenged our people. I said, the way that we're going to be successful in the future is that everyone look at your position, whatever position that is, you are a leader in that role. You can be the best receptionist. You can be the best legal support coordinator or, you know, as you said, sales technician. And then if you really will work on being intentional about becoming the best you can at that role of doing things that maybe aren't in your job description, but need to be done and stepping up and helping, then you get that reputation of being an impact player, that you go above and beyond and doing that. And then doors open up. One of the best leaders in our firm was someone, when I met her, she was a receptionist in our Baltimore office. But she didn't just answer the phone and send you to someone. She was solving problems. People would come into the lobby and they would need this or they need that, or an attorney had a problem or a challenge, or the break room wasn't, you know, wasn't fully stocked. She didn't say, that's not my job. She owned it and she fixed it. And you just felt like she was someone who was on your side. She was trying to clear the path for you to succeed. And now, you know, several years later, she's gotten a couple promotions where she's the assistant office administrator of that entire office. And so I would say no matter where you are, you do have the ability to influence others and to really grow those leadership skills. And you may not have an ambition to get a promotion, but you do get that reputation of people can rely on you and trust you. I've just seen it work for me. I've seen it work for people around our firm. So I really believe in it.
I mean, it's served me every time I've done anything, to be honest, whether it's working in a company or with the clients that I decide to take on. And I wonder if there's something tangible people can, like, listen to this podcast. Like, what's an action that I could take back to my work when I listen to this and I go back the next day? What is something I could do differently or an attitude that I could change that would help me actually start nurturing these skills?
I think one thing is just to, you know, lift your head up a little bit. I think sometimes we come into work and we have our head down, we're doing what is our job description, what is on our plate. But if you step up, you know, look up a little bit and look around and see that there's things that aren't getting done or things that could get done better, and then speaking up and saying, hey, I think this might be a better way to do this because I'm in the trenches. I see that that's not really working as well. You know, maybe we can do this, or I see a need that's not getting fulfilled or a job that people aren't doing well, and I can step in and help a little bit, not to be, you know, bossy, not to push someone else out of the way, but just something that needs to be done and stepping up and acting on that. I think that's just some easy ways to do that. I'm going to forget his name, but there's a famous professor at the London School of Economics who talked about this idea that we all have a leadership aroma in how we show up every day. He was originally from Calcutta, India, and he said during the summer, because he taught all year, he'd go back to Calcutta and it's 103 degrees and the humidity is, 100%, and you're just lethargic. You don't feel like doing anything. You just want to lie around. And then he compares that to the time he got to teach in southern France for a semester. And he talked about Fontainebleau Forest, and you just get this energy from walking through that in the spring. And he says, how do you want to show up every day? Do you want to show up as Calcutta in the summer or Fontainebleau, forest in spring? And I think how you show up can have a big difference tomorrow when you go into work, how you approach what you're doing. It doesn't mean it's all going to be rosy. There's going to be bad days. There's going to be people that get on your nerves. But if you can look at helping solve other people's problems or help clear the way for them to succeed, I think that's going to give you a bigger reputation and then probably open up more opportunities for you.
I don't know the source of the statistics. Maybe it's just a whisper that I've heard around lawyers, which talks about some of the biggest struggles with mental health come from this profession. And, in sales, there's also such an emotional roller coaster that exists when you're in sales. You can close a deal and you're feeling on the top of the world. You could be on a bad downward spiral and it can affect yourself mentally as well. I'd be curious how you notice in the sales profession and even in leadership professions that you've been holding, the role of mental health and emotional, stability or intelligence, quite frankly, has played into helping you be more successful.
Yeah, you're exactly right. That in the legal profession, it's got higher statistics of folks who struggle with mental health issues, depression, alcohol, substance abuse. And I think a lot of it is lawyers as a whole, are more autonomous. They're more siloed. They don't like to collaborate as much. That's why we talk a lot about collaboration, because they're kind of protective of what they do. And it's the same type of thing that you were talking about with sales, because you can win a big case or you're on that emotional roller coaster. You could lose a big case. You can close a big deal and you can have your best year ever. And then you roll around to January 1st and all the numbers on your dashboard go back to zero. And now it's like, what have you done for me lately? Which is the same thing in sales, right? You can't rely on, hey, that was a great year last year. And so what we really focused on is destigmatizing the fact of even talking about that. I'm very open that I talk to a therapist every 5 or 6 weeks. And that just helps me have a safe space to talk through issues that I may be struggling with. We have provided coaching for our colleagues, access to mental health professionals for them and for their families, and really just talking about it, providing other resources. And so it's just something that I think talking about it, destigmatizing it, and recognizing we have to take care of ourselves to be able to serve our clients and help each other is something that I think has been a big step forward for us to really focus on that.
Well, that's good. And yeah, for sure in sales as well, this is something that we can apply on the same concepts here. So Tim, one of the things that fascinates me when I heard of your introduction is that you've worked particularly with insolvency cases and bankruptcy cases. And from a sales perspective, I can just imagine that there's a lot of sad, angry people, and your job seems to be the one to be able to bring everybody on the same side and sell them into whatever's the best outcome given the really dire situation. And so I'm wondering if you'd be able to share us one of the stories of how that usually comes together and how does that sales process look like?
Yeah, it's a great question. And one of the ones that I look back on fondly as one of my bigger victories was I represented a bank who was actually headquartered in Birmingham, Alabama, but was at the time one of the 15 largest banks in the country. And they had a very large loan to a group of about 6 nursing homes in Texas. And the parent company filed bankruptcy in Delaware. So we're fighting over getting payments. They were taking the position that the value of collateral had deteriorated and they didn't have to pay us all this money. And it was a big loan for the bank. It was not a bet the company type loan, but it was big enough that it was going to impact them. So we went to battle in court and against the, it was a big New York firm and thinking, oh, who are these guys from Alabama? You know, and we went up there and we won. The judge agreed with us about the values of the property. So we're high-fiving and then they appeal it and say, no, judge, you got this wrong. Actually, they filed a motion for rehearing. They wanted to rehear certain aspects of her ruling. So then we have to go up in court. We're trying to defend her ruling was right. And she said, well, maybe I did get one part of that wrong. And then she sent it back to have another trial. And so that was like, it was a win. And then it was like a challenge, there's obstacles. And then she said, but I also want you to go to mediation. I want you to try to solve this. And our bank really needed to get this resolved. So we went to a mediation, went over a couple of days, and we agreed on the terms of a deal. It's going to get our bank paid in full over time, and we all agreed to it, but it had to be documented and closed by the end of the next quarter because they needed to get payments going again. And that quarter happened to be when 9/11 happened here in the United States. And all their lawyers were up in New York. Now, they weren't impacted directly, but of course, everyone in New York was impacted. And so we had to get that closed by like September 30th for our bank not to have a big issue with their own, you know, investors. Our colleagues on the other side in New York were, of course, really challenging, trying to just keep life going. So that was a pretty intense time. And this dates it a little bit, but literally on, 5 o'clock on September 30th, I think it was a Friday, the fax signatures come in so that our bank could book it and get it done. But it just took a lot of persistence and it took perseverance, but it also took grace, to understand that they weren't delaying things to try to delay it. They were trying to deal with life, But it was a way that just, I think we had built some empathy towards them so that then when we really had to get it done, we all did get it done through a really difficult, challenging time where we had been litigating over it all. So, and ultimately, as I said, the bank did get it paid in full, but that was an early win that really helped though cement my career because a lot of those bankers who were involved in that and saw that I had the tenacity like they did, but also the tact to be able to come together with an agreement and have gone on to do a lot of other work and they've continued to send me work over time. So that was an early victory.
Nice. So like how many lawyers are involved in something of that size? Like, are you there alone or there's a whole team?
Well, I did have another young lawyer with me, but then the New York firms, the traditional, like you do see, like they'll walk in with 8 or 10 lawyers. So yeah. So I feel like you're like, David versus Goliath, right? And that's why the victory was so big. But we did have a couple other people that were helping on it and getting it done.
It does sound like fun when you're saying that story.
Yeah. It's interesting because I absolutely loved practicing law and I don't practice anymore. This is basically a full-time job leading the firm. When I was first approached about whether I wanted my name to be considered as the next CEO of the firm, I really had said no at first because I loved the team I worked with. I loved our clients. I loved what we were doing. But then there was a little something inside me over the next couple of weeks said, well, but you do love leadership and I love leading our team. And I'd led some other things within the firm. And I thought, let me just put my name in the hat and see how this goes. And I was fortunate to be selected. And of course, now I don't even want to go back to practice law. I just love doing this and love trying to see people, get the confidence that they can step up, that they can play at that next level and to try to grow and thrive. And young lawyers can have a pathway to try to grow whatever their career ambition is, whether it's to stay here their whole career or just to build their muscles, their legal muscles, to then go, serve in-house. That just really gets me fired up now. So yeah, but I did love practicing for sure.
Well, given your new role as CEO, now, this is a big company and there's thousands of people in here, right? So how much of your work actually has to do with developing talent versus the other activities you have to do?
Yeah, so one of the things that's definitely on my plate is strategy of the firm. And I mentioned that we have Baker Vision 2028, which is really all built around this idea of becoming a better trusted advisors to our clients. And there's nothing new about that, but it is really, that's what the clients want. They want someone who knows their business, knows their industry, and proactively can help them solve their problems and achieve their strategies. And it'd be easy just to say, go be a trusted advisor. Godspeed, but I said, we can't just tell you to go be trusted advisors. We got to build the training behind that. And so I did, that was something that was a part of the strategy was we had to come along and really expand what we call our Baker talent and build out like a trusted advisor academy and build out that leadership academy for our younger lawyers I mentioned. So the day to day is not as much me doing the training, but it is something that fell under me there as we launched this strategic vision. But I do, I mean, certainly I have opportunities. I do town halls a lot with the firm. I do have, you know, Ask Tim Anything, and I'm able to do some coaching and training. And certainly our leadership team gets together in person a couple times a year, and I'm doing some training for them, just trying to pour into them to help them better lead their organizations. And I do get jazzed up by doing that, but it's not as much in the day-to-day. The day-to-day, it's really more strategy, growing the firm, and really just the culture that falls to me to try to make sure that I'm the keeper of the culture, which includes getting around all 24 of our offices and walking the halls and making sure that I'm listening to people and figuring out how we can do better, how we can better serve our clients. So that's really more what my day-to-day looks like.
Nice. I notice also your book has just come out. You have a podcast of the same name. Being a public figure as a CEO, is that something that is really emerged in the last like 10, 20 years for people that are CEOs? Because sometimes I imagine a CEO is kind of like in their office, isolated. But now it's like, well, you definitely seem to me like one of the healthy leadership models, CEO models, because you're putting yourself out there, you're making yourself accessible, you're connecting with the people. Is that a trend you're noticing across the industry, or are we being proactive here and doing it better?
Well, maybe some of all of that. It's interesting because we've intentionally been in a growth mindset and really trying to add other lawyers to join us that, you know, have similar cultural values and also and how they serve clients. And I have heard from individuals, like when I go visit them in an office, said, my prior CEO, I was here for 10 years and I never saw them. And again, I'm not saying that that's everybody. I think there's a lot of other CEOs and certainly in other organizations and other law firms who are out there proactively walking the halls. But that's just been part of our culture, and it's part of who I am. Actually, some of my favorite times are when I'm out just visiting in an office. Our COO and I are now in the middle of we call it our summer road trip, and we're doing all 24 offices over about a 6 or 7 week period traveling together. And it is exhausting because you're in the office all day, you're walking the halls, you're doing 2 presentations, you're having a social event, and then you get in the car and drive to the next office. And then you get to the hotel, and then you have to do the work that you weren't able to get done because you're there, right? But I am so fired up by just interacting with their people, hearing how we can get better. Because like I said, they're in the trenches, they're serving clients. There's obstacles that I don't really recognize that are occurring in delivering, you know, exceptional legal service, that then I hear and then, okay, well, we can fix that. We can make that more efficient. So I really get jazzed by that. But I think it is rare. But it's something where I thrive in that. And I think it makes us a better firm. Not because it's me doing it, but it's because then we can connect better, particularly because we are spread out over 25 offices.
Tim, I'm happy to see that you're somebody that's bringing that to the forefront. I think it's going to be very healing to your industry. And it's got me very curious about legal again, knowing that there's some very good apples, at least perceived so far, out of the industry. There's one question I kind of want to ask, and I'll frame it as this. I'll ask for a friend, but I think it's going to be very useful, particularly since the majority of my listeners might be much smaller companies. Some of them may be even like individual contractors. And I find that there's been an emergence in the legal field of a lot of self-serve options. Tech companies offering you for a lot of things, whether it's like corporate setup, and you can get a lot of information yourself. But I feel like there's a certain point that you're like, oh, maybe I need to have like a legal counsel on my side. And I would assume your answer is slightly biased, saying everybody needs to have a legal counsel. But realistically, when it comes for an organization, at what point does legal become something you seriously need to consider having in your back pocket?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And you're right. And particularly with the advances in technology, I mean, you can get on, you know, AI and have them write a contract for you, right? From pulling from different things. I do think, and we do a lot of work with emerging companies, and we have something we call Baker Bridge. As I said, it's Baker, but it's, you know, small organizations trying to bridge towards, you know, really getting their organization ramped up, where we do some really low cost, basic legal for services just to get them started. But I think at the point where you are interacting and entering into contracts that have some significant, you know, issues involved, I think you need somebody just to look at that as a second eye rather than just relying on, you know, something that you pull off the internet. And I think that's just the thing. Well, lawyers over lawyer, right? Because they come up with all the, you know, things that could go wrong. But that's really born out of seeing that happen in the, you know, where people didn't actually document things. And so I would encourage it. I mean, there's a lot of different options in, you know, different countries. You can get some low cost or even pro bono corporate work where you can ask legal questions and try to get some of that basic legal advice. But as you're growing and as you're really entering into contracts where you're thinking about things like intellectual property rights, you know, things you've created, sales approaches, sales techniques that you're trying to protect, trademark type issues. I think those are things you really probably need some expertise in. And yeah, there's some cost involved, but it's, I think when you reach that point where you're really ready to take that step to the next level, you probably need some counsel. It doesn't mean that you have to get the Wall Street law firm that's going to charge you. I heard some law firms now charge $3,000 an hour. That's not us. That's crazy. But just find somebody that can, you know, give you some advice and walk you through some things. So I think it's when you're really starting to ramp up and you're starting to think about signing some pretty significant contracts. You just want somebody to help you think through that.
Tim, I'm so glad that I've connected with you. I've recently stepped into taking on a fractional CEO role within an organization. And I think a lot of the things you shared right now about the way that you lead, the way that you operate as CEO, are inspiring me that I think I'm following some good steps already. And you're reassuring me that I think everybody leads. The mindset around that is so strong, and the fact that you're doing it at the size and impact of the organization you lead is truly inspiring, and I'm feeling quite grateful to have connected. But I don't let you go before asking the question I ask everybody, which is, you are on the Selling with Love podcast, so I have to ask you, what does selling with love mean to you?
As I said, I love your approach. I mean, I think it's interesting. I've shared this before, but my daughter got married a couple of years ago, and you know, a lot of weddings have those verses, the love chapter about, you know, love is patient, love is kind. And I really started thinking about that. That's really what leadership's all about being patient and kind and not being rude and not being self-seeking and not being, you know, easily angered and not holding on to grudges. And, you know, leadership's about protecting, which is, you know, love is, you know, protects, hopes, trusts, perseveres. That's really what leadership's all about, and it's really what love's all about. So to me, it's all about authentically showing up every day, helping others, and helping others solve their problems so that they can achieve their, you know, strategic goals, their ambitions, their career ambitions, and really thriving. So that's why I applaud what you're doing, because you're really impacting the world by talking and thinking about sales as love and selling with love, because I think that's going to differentiate you in the marketplace.
Tim, it was an absolute pleasure having this conversation with you. Thank you for sharing on the show. For everybody tuning in, we're going to put a link towards Everybody Leads so you can actually pick up a copy of that book. I have a feeling it's coming out today or tomorrow if you're listening to the release of this podcast. And if you are looking for some legal counsel, I'm going to put a link to the firm as well. I'm definitely going to be sticking around and asking Tim a few questions myself to see if there's a possibility of collaboration, because it does sound like they've put together an incredible firm that does good by people. So I'm at least now curious to go and ask more. If you're feeling the same and you're looking for legal, well, you now have a good reference with Tim's firm. Thank you so much, Tim. It was a pleasure.
It's been a real joy, Jason. I really appreciate it.
I am your host, Jason Mark Campbell, and this is the Selling with Love podcast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.